Welcome to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks filling in. It's day two of my fill-in week.
How'd it go yesterday?
It went great after we got the phones working. The first hour was, I felt a bit like the Enterprise was losing power and someone had hit Scotty in the head with a wrench and he was like, I don't know where anything is, Captain. Everybody was just running around. And we did bring in Scotty and actually got it fixed. What was the gentleman's name yesterday?
Oh, it was Jerry.
Jerry came in and managed to magically fix everything. This tucked in plaid shirt.
The call
sleeve
coming
shirt.
In and you just couldn't answer.
Yeah, they,
that?
Could, yeah, they couldn't hear me.
Just couldn't on the air.
Yeah, oh. I could hear them, which is even weirder. Like, I'd almost get it if it was like an awkward noise, but there was this, I know there's a button not being pushed somewhere.
It's like every call with my parent. Hello?
Right, hello?
You there? I can't hear
Turn
you.
Turn the phone around. You're talking into the earpiece again. Right, yeah. So we eventually got there, though. Yes, we got it up and running. Of course, though, I was so proud of myself that I was going to start the show off with a bang by going, we're going to talk about something controversial. I'm going to get these callers calling in talking about the Snowden, NSA, Greenwald / David Gregory thing from Sunday.
Did you get into it yesterday?
Oh, yeah, okay. We did. But unfortunately, we weren't able to take that many calls on it because in the first hour, that was our main topic of discussion, and the phones didn't work. And we had, of course, guests that we needed to move on to. We didn't get to hear Lee Papa. We're going to reschedule him for later in the week.
Oh, good, okay.
Because he was like, I hear music. I have rhythm. Well, who could ask for anything more? We just had nothing. And so hopefully we'll get him back at the end of the week and be able to talk to him. But what I was posing, and I'm curious to hear what your take on it is, and I, of course, want to hear from people to call in as well. 1-800-STEPH-12 being the number. If you don't already have that programmed in your phone, I really can't help you.
Did we
honestly.
Introduce ourselves?
Beg your pardon?
Did we introduce ourselves?
Yes, I said Hal Sparks, day two of filling in for Stephanie.
I'm Jackie.
I haven't gotten you yet. I'm doing the whole... I was leading up to it, and you started
Tony?
Talking. I was trying to... Well, we don't introduce Tony.
Who I am.
No. No, it's not that we don't want to know who Tony is. We just don't introduce him for legal reasons.
It's my life's mission to get him to talk.
Oh, well.
Like, regularly.
Oh, I get Tony to talk. That's not a problem. Yeah, no. Tony and I talk like crazy. We just talk about touring bands and get complete. You think I go off on a tangent when you're here? Yeah. Anyways, so and by the way, I did introduce you when we did the little news segment at the beginning, and we will continue to do so.
Yeah, but
Jackie
that's only
Schechner,
for the current
I know,
audience.
Well, as opposed to the past or future audience.
Of
course, with us today and for the rest of the week.
What are you, the defense attorney?
How am I supposed to introduce you if you keep interrupting me? You know nothing about radio.
Shut up and never say anything again as long as you live.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to introduce to you the lovely, the talented, the newsworthy Jackie Schechner.
Thank you.
Yeah, see how easy that was? Yay.
I just have to shut up for 30 seconds.
Right,
and
for
a, get it
you
in.
Know, absolutely. It's just lunch, Jackie. it's day two. I am already cracking the stees early in the show because these hours are a bit rough. Here's the thing. We have a lot of news to talk about, clearly. We're going to talk about more of the Snowden thing because that is a continually unfolding drama that will probably be a movie starring either Matt Damon or Tom Hanks or Leonardo DiCaprio fairly soon.
I'm thinking who could play him.
Oh, just about anybody who used to be on the CW, I think.
Yeah, probably. A James Vanderbeek.
Exactly. Movie. We could bring him out of retirement.
Yeah.
And have him... Have him do these Snowden, and it'll be like the Jodi Arias movie. It won't really be in theaters. It'll be one of those. Have you seen the ads for that?
No.
Oh, Dirty Little Secret, I think it's called.
Oh,
and it's
come on.
Oh, and it's on Lifetime, which is the appropriate venue. Let's be completely honest.
Yeah.
But I think it's the only Lifetime movie I think you could also air concurrently on Spike. You know what I mean? Just Reese, like, I don't know. I know in the end she stabs the guy, but I still want to sleep with her. It's like, it should be like every guy has in his past a woman like that that he either dodged or got out just in time, or in the case of Jody's boyfriend, didn't. And we can relate. We can all relate.
Yeah, that was the most attention given to a trial that I think mattered the least that I've ever seen.
Absolutely, right.
I mean, there was no... She wasn't famous. She hadn't done anything important.
Mm-mm.
There was no actual societal benefit to covering that trial, other than the fact that there were some salacious details.
It was prurient at its root, and that was we were all very excited at the idea that there might be some photos shown or something. It was almost like everybody was clamoring to, when are they going to put the those? I understand the defense and the prosecution both have some cell phone pictures that are those going to be printed out and put on a easel at any point during the next the coming weeks? Is that possible? Will that be in the description in the TV guide?
I've never been so proud of the people I follow on Twitter and my friends on Facebook that most people said things like, who the heck's Jodi Arias?
Right, yeah.
Why do I care about this trial? And I thought, I have good taste in friends.
Yeah, exactly. And the funny thing is, I just remember every so often catching that they were updating it on the news and going, is this still happening? I don't understand what this is going on. Now, the Trayvon Martin
Zimmerman different
thing
story.
Is a totally different story, and I think deserves as much scrutiny as it can be given. And we're going to play, after we come back from the break, we're going to play some audio from the opening remarks of that business. And here's a couple of odd things, and this will tip off the conversation. We're going to get to Snowden, and we're going to get to the Greenwald David Gregory situation that we didn't get to take calls on yesterday. 1-800-STEP-12 being the number in just a little bit. But I will say that the craziness that was involved in the circumstance of Trayvon Martin's death, which is I think gross and a horrible injustice if this guy goes free. I have my strong opinions about it. I don't know what it says for Florida if it means that if someone approaches you with a gun and that you're just supposed to get shot. That's the idea, that if you fight back in any way or you manage to get the upper hand, even, and I'm not saying that's what happened with Trayvon Martin, that's the defense.
Right.
Is that basically they're saying if a guy walks up to you with a gun and says, what are you doing in my neighborhood? Who are you? Probably calls you a racial epithet or at least insinuates that that's how he feels with a loaded gun pointed at you, that you're supposed to take the bullet just so he can get arrested later.
That would be the precedent that would be set.
Right.
If he goes free.
That's what I mean. You're the precedent. You'd have to literally die. You want to die a statistical precedent. But if you get a hold of the gun and you manage to fight your way out of it, if the guy gets loose and manages to still shoot you, now it's justified. That's really what the argument is. And it is horrifying if that is the case, because then it is just open season on anyone different. And I don't know how in Florida that is okay. How do you...
Have you been to Florida?
Oh, I know. Yeah, I have.
And I am a native Floridian, so I will put that out there.
But Florida is actually almost an entirely tourist-born state. Between Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Key West, and Orlando, that is an enormous part of the existence.
Oh, and, sure, yeah.
And the migration factor of moving there, because it's a nice place to move to as you get older.
Yeah, orange juice and tourism.
Exactly. And believe me, I'll get my orange juice from California if it means I don't have to worry that somebody's just going to not like my clothes, decide to follow me with a gun, knowing I'm unarmed, confront me unarmed with a gun, and decide that if I don't just kneel down and let them shoot me, that somehow they're justified in going ahead and shooting me. That, to me, the idea of self-defense in this situation is absurd beyond measure. And we'll play a clip of what the defense's idea of what weapon that Trayvon Martin had. The defense has argued that Trayvon Martin was not unarmed. And how
I missed this? How did I miss this?
Oh, wait till you hear why he was unarmed, what his weapon of choice was. It's stunning. We'll be back right after this. More of the Stephanie Miller Show. And, of course, your calls. We're going to discuss this over the next segment and take your calls, too. But we're also going to talk about Snowden, where he is, why it matters, and why the American people now have a stake in keeping this guy alive. It's why it's important to our national security that he not be killed by somebody else who just wants to destabilize our political system for a little while, which it could easily do. We'll be back right after this.
As it turns out, the revolution will not be televised. It's on the radio. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
filling in. You always know when I'm filling in because there's more Kiss.
Yeah, if you're not awake, you are now.
Yeah, exactly. Those are Bob Ezra and the producer's kids screaming in the background.
Is that really?
It gave it this spooky feel. They recorded them playing in the studio, and then at the end, they say goodnight because he puts them to bed there or whatever, and you hear this door lock.
How creepy.
It's great. It's just genius, you know, environmental stuff. That's why I love the 70s, man. That being said, we got a bunch of calls who are already wanting to weigh in on this, but I want to play a little bit of audio of the Zimmerman trial yesterday. And the first one up is the opening statements. Now, yesterday, MSNBC had to apologize.
Oh, my goodness. Did you catch that?
For airing F-bomb after F-bomb after F-bomb because the opening statement of Trayvon's, of the prosecution, I almost said Trayvon's lawyers, but the prosecution used the language that Zimmerman used to describe on the phone this kid before he went and shot him.
But the best part was they used the language a couple of times. Chuck Todd comes on TV and says, "We're sorry, we're going to institute a 7-second delay. Hang on. Okay, let's go back." And then immediately...
Bang! Right away! Yeah. It was great. Luckily, the FCC just ruled that you can't be blamed for that kind of...
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, that's a new thing. Again, it matters who's president. Yeah. Yeah, that rule from the Bush administration that they were basically using to just shut down anyway, it was one of those back pocket rules that in case they needed to shut down a media outlet, they could.
They had it available.
Yeah, but you're not actually technically responsible for that kind of thing. You won't pay the $750,000 a second fine or whatever it is. So this is, I guess, what Zimmerman's lawyer thought was a good idea as far as how to open his argument. And keep in mind, prosecution opened with shocking language and the description of Zimmerman calling the police and the police saying, "Meet us at the gate. Don't go anywhere near him. Do not pursue." And this guy got out of his car, said the hell with that, and followed this unarmed teenager who had an iced tea and Skittles, famously, and ended up killing this kid. Killing an unarmed civilian for walking in the wrong place. 1949 era way to treat a black person. And Zimmerman still thinks
that. Yeah, it wasn't walking in the wrong place. It was being the wrong skin color.
Wasn't rapping and throwing his arms up in the air. Wasn't making gun hand signals at people. None of that stuff. Simply.
He was on the phone with his girlfriend.
Right. And he's saying, "This guy's chasing me." Like, the description is horrifying. And paints a picture, and I think rightly so. And again, this is my opinion. Of Zimmerman as a guy who has a grudge, a racial grudge. If his dad's ebook is any indication, it's a familial thing. His family, I don't know if you saw, his dad released an ebook about why his son is innocent and basically in it.
Since the shooting,
just recently.
Okay.
Yeah, right before the trial started.
That seems like a good strategy.
Yeah, where he basically says African Americans are violent by nature. Yeah. Great. So,
thumbs up on that one.
Yeah. And in this is the lawyer that they have, and this was his way of opening his statement after this horrifying description by the prosecution of how this went down. This is what the defense decided to open with.
I think the evidence will show that this is a sad case, that there are no monsters here. Sometimes you have to laugh to keep from crying. So let me, at considerable risk, let me say, I'd like to tell you a little joke. I know how that may sound a bit weird in this context under these circumstances, but I think you're the perfect audience for it. As long as you if you don't like it or you don't think it's funny or inappropriate, that you don't hold it against Mr. Zimmerman. You can hold it against me if you want, but not Mr. Zimmerman. I have your assurance. You won't. Here's how it goes. Knock, knock. Who's there? George Zimmerman. George Zimmerman, who? All right, good. You're on the jury. Nothing? That's funny. After what you folks have been through the last 2 or 3 weeks?
Wow. That's
And then he chastises them. You figured, here's
a loser, you know, a deadbeat.
Right.
You didn't laugh during the murder trial?
Yeah.
What's wrong with you people?
You're going to open the defense of a guy who shot an unarmed 17-year-old.
With a knock-knock
joke. Now, that would be, and by the way, that is, I think, the cringe factor alone would almost be made up for if his defense was somehow so powerful so as to define, like, you go, oh, well, he could afford almost one flub because the premise of their defense is going to be huge.
They're going for mistrial on the grounds of totally incompetent representation.
Right. Yeah.
That's the only explanation. It's a totally comedic performance on the part of the defense. Not intentionally, but I'm saying, like, that's where that's heading. There's no other explanation for why you would do that.
Sure there is. Hubris on the part of this attorney. And the idea that this guy would somehow throw himself on a grenade so that this guy could go free and go, I just did that. That was a ploy for the court. I would throw it the first time so that we, like, what kind of nutty attorney? Who would ever hire this guy again if that was actually his strategy? You know, it's like when you hear Lenny Bruce talk about his attorney going, no, we're building a case in the appellate court. Yeah, in the appellate court when I've run out of money. That's a great plan. This is even worse. But here's the actual strategy from the defense. This is what he's actually going to use as the defense against Trayvon Martin, posthumous defense against this young man.
If I've heard it once, I've heard it 1,000 times that Trayvon Martin was unarmed. What the evidence will show you is that's not true. Trayvon Martin armed himself with the concrete sidewalk and used it to smash George Zimmerman's head. No different than if he picked up a brick or bashed a head against a wall. That is a deadly weapon. And the law is very specific about when you can defend yourself when the other person has a deadly weapon. Please listen to all of the evidence. You're going to be with us. We're going to be with you for a while. Maybe not as long as we first thought. A couple of weeks, I hope.
According to Zimmerman's attorney, that if you are in a three-dimensional physical environment,
you're armed. I was armed with a tree.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, really?
Yeah. That in and of itself is stunning. His argument, and I think the argument for anybody who sort of supports the stand your ground concept in regard to this situation, is that I'm allowed to shoot you without you trying to interfere in that process. And if you try to interfere in that process, it's actually justified. In the beginning, I have a stand your ground law. I don't have to tell you not to approach. I don't have to say anything to you. Mm-hmm. I can just shoot you. But in case that you do decide to turn tail and run, or you do decide to back up with your hands up, I can approach you and wave the gun in your face. And if you believe for a second that I'm going to shoot you, really believe it, and you try to go for the gun, I am now... It's now self-defense. It's the old 50s cop, spit on my gun, wipe off the spit off my hand. It's nuts. We'll be back right after this with your calls. 1-800-STEP-12. Know the video to this song to know what the heck I'm doing.
Do I?
He has a giant inflatable microphone. That's all I'm going to say.
Is that a euphemism or is it a microphone?
No, it's definitely a euphemism. Okay. It's, yeah. But he can't even, I mean, he can't even compete with what Steve Vai is doing with his guitar.
Oh.
We're, yeah, genius. Just ridiculous genius and having such a great time. Let's,
I didn't think that's where that was going.
Let's take some calls. And right away, Line 6 thinks that Zimmerman was justified.
Ooh.
Hey, Joe.
Hi, yeah, this is Joe from Buffalo. I'm not necessarily saying it was absolutely justified, but as somebody who basically has suffered a brutal assault, mine was actually a hate crime in Buffalo, suburb of Buffalo, but the situation, I think, you'd have to understand it from a different perspective, one of which would be that when Zimmerman actually was speaking to the police, well, not to the dispatcher, and was walking back, you have to understand the shape of the actual apartment, which has been released complex. He was walking back through a T from left to right. Trayvon Martin went all the way back up this rectangular apartment complex, went all the way around past his apartment, and then came back and confronted George Zimmerman from behind. The first witness actually witnessed him on top of George Zimmerman, smashing his head and George Zimmerman screaming for help. And that, in that context, I mean,
yeah, first of all, the screams themselves, and the prosecution made this case yesterday, they believed to be coming from Trayvon, and they ended the moment the shot rang out.
Hold on.
As a victim of a hate crime, I'm not going to question your own personal feelings about having been attacked in this situation. But the reality is, confrontation or no, he was in his car when he spoke to the police, and they said, leave it alone. And he followed a guy with a gun.
Not true. He didn't follow the guy. If you actually listen to the thing.
Did he get out of his car?
They asked him for an address. He walked to the end of the street to find the address. They said to him very specifically, I've made several videos about this. There's actually a great investigative journalist. He said to him, we do not need you to do that. He said, okay. And they said, well, I'm going back. He's basically going back to his car.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the idea that he followed him, followed this kid. The kid was on the phone with his girlfriend.
Right.
He wasn't being followed. The confrontation.
He said in the phone call, he actually says, I think this guy's following me.
Yes, but then that was a. But you're missing.
Yeah, but what?
Here's
the fact of the matter. I appreciate that you're coming at it. I appreciate that you're coming at it from the point of view that you've been attacked in your life. But the reality is, an armed man shot an unarmed man unprovoked.
Okay. Unprovoked. He's getting his head smashed in. Are you kidding me? Unprovoked. When you're on the ground getting your head smashed.
So what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed? You come up to me, you Joe from Buffalo. You approach me. You are armed. You come and approach me with a gun.
But he didn't have his gun out.
Based on what?
Why? Okay. First of all, logically speaking,
I'm not talking about logic. Where's your information that he didn't have the gun exposed or out in any way?
Where's your information that he did? You're claiming that you're giving facts, but all of the facts are basically, I'm not giving opinions. I'm giving what actually eyewitness accounts.
Show that he approached him unarmed, that there was a fight broke out, that he pulled his gun and shot Trayvon Martin in full view of witnesses to keep his head from getting bashed into the ground. Face down.
Exactly right. First of all, let's get this. Okay, there was more than the two initial voice analysts who, I might add, were using a very controversial manner of voice analysis, which is not officially used. The several who used a traditional voice analysis said that it was coming from George Zimmerman.
I think you're making an enormous leap here as well.
No,
and I think
George
the I think the reality is
George, wait, hold on.
I think the reality is that you have a stake in this emotionally. And I also think that the reality of this
Okay, George Zimmerman also passed his stress test, which included questions about was he screaming for help.
What does that mean?
The Aurora shooter
passed a stress test. What does that mean? The Aurora shooter had no emotion about the fact that he had just shot a bunch of people. What does that mean?
What it means is he passed a lie detector test and a stress test.
So?
Okay, those are those are professionally used in those cases. That's why they gave it to him.
So no emotional spike because you get no emotional spike because you don't care. Maybe because if you think you're shooting a dog, you don't care.
Yes.
You're using this as an indication that somehow that an unarmed man had it coming.
Okay. I mean, you
had
can
it coming.
Me if you want to. I mean, that's cool. They had it coming. No, an unarmed man. You're not unarmed when you're assaulting somebody. I mean, that is not the equivalent of walking down the street. When you're assaulting somebody who's on the ground for over a minute and feels he's losing consciousness, Okay, that's not the equivalent. And secondly, why would I approach somebody with the intent, a premeditated intent upon murdering them with a gun and then find myself on the ground being assaulted and then wait a minute to shoot the person?
I'll give you a reason. Because maybe you were your intent was to menace. And when you actually pulled out your gun and wagged it around, you didn't have the guts to pull the trigger right away. And you found yourself confronted by someone who was defending themselves. If you're going to make a bigger reach, right? Why isn't that logical? Explain to me why that isn't logical. And why, if you approached me, Joe, from Buffalo, with a gun and decided to scare me out of your neighborhood because you're armed, and I believe that I'm going to be killed by you. Listen to what I'm saying. If I believe because you're waving a gun in my face that I'm going to be killed, and then I try to get it away from you, try to defend myself, you're now justified in killing me in self-defense? Really?
Now you're giving a stretch which is not the prosecution's case. They're saying this premeditated murder, essentially. Okay, you're making a leap now.
No, they're not. No, they're not. They're saying he shot an unarmed teenager.
That's why it's second degree murder. It's second degree murder.
What was the statement, though, with the intent to murder him? I mean, first of all, though, I mean, the idea that he chased this kid down, there was over a minute 45 that occurred between the initial call and then when the confrontation occurred.
So? There's not a minute 45 of distance and conversation in that time?
Do you notice the geographical terrain that had to be traversed by Trayvon Martin to get back to that T? Look at the actual, go on Google Earth and look at the apartment complex.
Wait, can I just throw something in here? Hold on one second. Joe, let me just throw something in here, okay? Trayvon Martin's a 17-year-old kid who's staying with his parents. Okay?
His dad and his girlfriend.
Right.
His dad,
hold on. Wait. It's not irrelevant if you let me finish the sentence. Okay. It may actually get to be relevant, okay?
He's staying with his uncle. He got kicked out. His parents made him stay there because he got...
Okay, it doesn't really matter why he's at the house. Okay. Here's the point I'm going for. He's staying at a house with his father and the father's girlfriend, okay? Yeah. He wants to talk to his girlfriend, and he's a 17-year-old kid. So he finds a reason to leave the house, right? So he's on the phone. He goes to get a snack. Whatever it is he's doing, he doesn't want to talk on the phone with his girlfriend as a teenager in front of his parents. So he's wandering the neighborhood on his phone. I don't know there's any teenager who wouldn't think about doing that. Like, let me get out of the house and wander the... Can I finish a sentence? Would that be okay? I have a microphone. I'm going to do it anyway. So he's on the phone talking to his girlfriend, wandering the neighborhood. I would do that, right? I mean, people do that. You want some privacy. So where he was in the course of the neighborhood is irrelevant. He wasn't doing anything other than talking on the phone.
It's totally not irrelevant because when he initially said that he was alarmed by some guy, he then traveled upwards around the apartment, which is...
He's not from there. Is he supposed to know the geography as well as you have because you've plotted it out after the fact for months and months?
He's
not from there. That he's actually staying there. He doesn't live there all the time.
Have you seen those complexes? They all look the same.
Right. At a certain point, I gotta go from that because it's just we're talking in circles, and it's just when you eventually get to the point, and we'll take another call before we get to the break because we're like there's a bunch of calls in the line, and I want to get to some of them or whatever. But Joe has made videos about why he thinks Zimmerman had the right to shoot somebody who didn't have a gun because that person started beating him up because he was following him with a gun. Like, it's silly. Let's go to Chris in Chicago.
You know, I don't think very much of what Joe from Buffalo said was true at all. I think that he's been reading the websites and, you know, going with this trumped up offense. The 911 dispatcher told him to stay in the car, not get out of the car and follow him. He got out of the car and followed the kid.
Yeah.
And I don't know if what they're conjecturing that he ran around this building. We don't know if that's true. We know that Zimmerman got out of the car and approached Trayvon Martin with a gun, and Trayvon Martin was unarmed and a teenager. And, you know, whether he threatened him with a gun and Trayvon Martin fought back, we don't know that for sure, but it sounds a whole hell of a lot more plausible than what Joe from Buffalo was, you know, just spewing out there. It's just right off these nasty websites. He's trying to get all these things.
I think Joe actually is one of those nasty websites. He said he's done multiple videos about this or whatever.
Then there's the interview with the cops afterwards, and you can see that on Charlie Pierce's blog, where they're interviewing Zimmerman, and he's talking about how these guys always get away, you know, and he's just going over the top. He's like, I don't know if I could say it, but these holes, they always get away, Zimmerman answers. The officer says, what's behind that? These people who victimize the neighborhood. He called like 911 40 times over like the weeks and was always out there, you know, looking for these things, and he thought he found one, and he also thought he found one that he could intimidate, is my conjecture for Joe in Buffalo. And I think, you know, being the, you know,
right,
idiot that he is, he quickly lost the upper hand there and then pulled a gun or just decided to fire. And the kid yelling in the the 911 call is Trayvon Martin. There is no way that grown man had that voice and screamed in that way after he would. No, that was just nuts. What I just had to listen to.
Yeah, it's absurd. But there's a good portion of it out there. I appreciate the call. We're up against
911 call telling him to stay in the car is going to do him in. He got out of that car.
Yeah, he sought the problem, and then when confronted with it, I believe. And like I said, this is. All you know, my belief on it, but the reality is, an armed man shot an unarmed man that he followed, that he sought out, and that doesn't qualify as stand your ground, and that's why I think he's up on second degree murder charges.
Yes.
It's that simple. Thanks for the call, Chris. I appreciate
You're welcome.
We're over the break, so let's take a break. When we come back, we'll take more of your calls at 1-800-STEPH-12. This is sort of becoming what the hour is about, but there's a lot of calls on the line
that
want to discuss this, and
I
think
it's worth having.
I just think it's so bizarre.
Just don't
to me.
Throw in some sort of knock-knock joke. We'll be good.
Yeah, exactly. I'll leave that to the defense. We'll be back right after this.
The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
My boomstick!
Is it true that there is a place in a man's head that if you shoot it, it will blow up?
Our loving fascination with guns in this country, people like the caller before was, Joe was basically arguing that if you have, you know, that might makes right in the bullet situation, there's just something right about that. It's kind of amazing to me. Let's go to Danette in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Danette.
Hi, Hal.
Hi.
Hey, I just wanted to say that it kind of bothers me that you and Joe have such strong opinions about this when really we have no idea who did it yet. The trial hasn't even really started. And how is he ever, in either side, supposed to get a fair trial if we all have our mind made up already before hearing everything? I've went from thinking Trayvon was the one in the right, and I've went to thinking George Zimmerman was, from different things I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should all calm down and wait until this trial plays out to make our decision.
Sure. I think part of what I'm litigating here and what I'm kind of discussing is the stand your ground law as a rule. More than anything else.
Right.
There's been multiple examples. There was a guy who shot his neighbor because the guy was making too much noise and tried to use the stand your ground law because he felt threatened because he told the guy to turn down his music at his party and he thought the guy was going to come over and shoot him later. That was his argument when he really just went over there with a gun yelling at his black neighbor to turn the music down and then shot him.
I agree. Now, I agree with that.
This is a consistent thing, and I have a real, real problem with an armed person shooting an unarmed person after instigating the conflict in any way. You know what I mean? I think there was a distinct enough piece of evidence that stay in the car. The cop said, "Don't do this," and that this guy
got out of the car.
Got out of the car and specifically went looking for this kid. And that in and of itself.
I said, are you following him? And George Zimmerman said yes, and he said, we don't need you to do that. He didn't say stay in your car. He said, we don't need you to do that.
He said, meet us at the gate to the place. The point is, he was doing – here's the thing. Regardless of what you just said, he still did it. He still sought him out. He still followed this kid when he did not need to.
And he ultimately that's not what he was doing.
Understood. But ultimately, what he ended up doing was shooting an unarmed child. And to me, there's an extra level of scrutiny that goes with that and the law surrounding the protection of someone who does that.
But is a 17-year-old really an unarmed child?
Yes,
because
a 17-year-old
commit horrendous.
But he had no weapon. I mean, this is a kid who was walking through the neighborhood
talking on the phone with a bag
of candy and an iced tea. He didn't
walk up to George Zimmerman's car and pull
him out of the car.
He wasn't
and beat
menacing.
Him up.
Yeah, he didn't walk by the window and give him the finger. He didn't menace him in any way.
Do we know that?
Yes.
Yes.
We know that.
Yes, we know that. Because
how?
Because all the evidence that's been out there and Zimmerman's walked through the confrontation with police.
Right, and when he walked through, that's what made me almost think Zimmerman was telling the truth when he was talking about his head being banged on the sidewalk.
Right, but why did he get out of the car in the first place?
Why did he approach somebody armed, and what did he say to get into that fight part of it? Get out of here, I've got a gun. What choice do you have in that situation? My argument is that at a certain point, an armed man confronted an unarmed kid who was on the phone holding a beverage and candy, and at some point the kid felt the need, if there was any altercation, like he's saying at all, if he didn't just grave his own, you know, hit his own face against the concrete to make it self-defense after the fact, because that's as plausible as any other thing since no witnesses saw that part of it.
George was waving a gun at him, that he ran up on him, pushed him to the ground, started banging him into his head into the sidewalk, knowing he had a gun at him.
Well, it doesn't sound right to me.
Well,
here's my question. How easy is it for you to shoot somebody? Because I think a lot
could
of
not shoot someone.
No. I mean,
it's not an easy thing to do.
Yes, I'm saying that a lot of people. I think one of the reasons why a lot of workplace shooters end up killing themselves is not some sort of act of mercy at the end of it necessarily, or that they wanted to go out that way or whatever. Is that I think the fantasy of shooting somebody, the fantasy of killing someone, is much more comfortable than the reality of it. And that if you've ever been confronted, I've done CPR 3 times in my life. And I've seen people die in front of me and had to bring them back. I've done, you know, the last time I did it was at LAX, and I watched this man go twice right in front of me. I watched the light drift out of his eyes, the breath come out of his mouth.
Heart attack?
He had a heart attack. And I did CPR on him. He came back. I had him for a couple of seconds, and then he went again. And the watching someone go through that, I had flashbacks from it. For 6 weeks later, I could draw you pictures of his eyes. And I think the reality when people who have this macho idea of what they're going to do with a gun, with the exception of people like the Aurora shooter who are really living in the fantasy of it.
Right.
I think when confronted with the reality of it, I think a lot of people actually can't do it. And when they look around at the office after they've shot people and they didn't all fall down like they were in an action movie, some of them are bleeding to death on the floor and it takes them time to die. I think that when confronted with that, it's a much more shocking thing. And I think when you pull a gun on somebody, it's not as easy to pop, 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 and it's over. Especially a guy who's built it up in his head over and over again, and he has this fantasy of what the person he's going to be confronted with, that he's a vigilante, that he's neighborhood watch, even though he wasn't neighborhood watch. And he's lurking around the neighborhood, finger on his gun, day after day, saying things like, these kids always get away with it, these a-holes always get away with it.
The neighborhood had been robbed several times.
You hold this gun up, and you hesitate for a second, and you've got it in my face, and I go, if I run, he's going to shoot me. I have one chance. Grab this thing and try to save myself. And as best you can, what am I going to do? When am I going to stop hitting you that you're not going to get that gun again and kill me if you get a chance? And then he manages to get it back and he shoots this child.
I mean, there's
and at some point you have
possibility, but I'd like to hear the forensic evidence that shows that before I decide for sure.
Sure. Well, what I'm saying is here's the evidence. One man had a gun, the other did not, period.
That's not enough.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Well, back
one
up and say, how did they end up facing each other in
wasn't.
The first place?
Yeah, how did they end up facing each other? How did they...
One was beaten up and the other one wasn't.
Right, but what I'm saying is...
Because he's dead.
Yeah, right. He can't defend himself.
The other guy lived. I know it might have been better if he had died from his head being shoved on the sidewalk.
No. But how did they get into the confrontation in the first place?
That's the issue. Is it stand your ground if you stalk somebody? And that's really the issue here.
And
more than anything. I appreciate the call. We're right up against the end. We got to go. We'll be back right after this. More of the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks. Filling in all week, Katie Speak is next to talk lady parts. Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. Stephanie, of course, is she's stationary biking her way up a hill right now.
It's tough, but it can happen.
If anybody can make it happen, anybody can get to the top of a hill
on a stationary bike,
it's Stephanie Miller. And, of course, Chris Lavoy is, I guess... He's awake watching the show right now. You know, don't ruin what I've truly hated. And Jim is still asleep. Jim will be asleep until 4 o'clock this afternoon. I'm sure of it.
Probably.
Yeah. Some of his other personalities.
Or he's voicing
are up.
Some sort of video game somewhere.
Exactly. I'm convinced that sometimes Jim's body gets up without him, and walks around talking like Sean Connery at different places, like that. You know what I mean? Wouldn't it be weird if? That's what, Jim had some sort of real...
Like the voices lived outside the body.
Not bipolar, but multipolar kind of an attitude where he just walked around. Hello, sir. And then, Jim, what were you doing yesterday? What do you mean I slept in? I didn't get up till 3. I was exhausted.
His personalities take on a personality of their own.
You came over to my house talking like Arnold Schwarzenegger for like 2 hours. It was amazing. I would have complained, but then, I ended up financing your next film. on the line with us, by the way, is my dear friend and lady parts expert, Katie Speak, joining us. Hi, Katie.
Good morning, Hal. Good morning, Jackie.
Good morning, love. How are you?
I am excellent. Did you know that Jonathan Winters actually used to do that? He talked about his podcast on Marc Maron. He used to walk around doing his voices.
Oh, yeah. Well, he lived in Montecito, of course, until his passing, and he would do that in restaurants. He would just go in and kind of be another person. The entire meal.
How much fun.
Oh, he was such a joy to be around. There's care enough not to give a crap. That's my motto, and that's why I love him and Martin Short. They're two of my favorite people because of that very reason. So, Katie, I'm sure that you have been following the Texas legislature and the special session they put in to pass the most egregious abortion law in the country's history, certainly in Texas's history. And can I play the clip? If the audio's kind of bad, so between the three of us, we may have to describe to the listener what's actually going on here. But this is a Texas legislator, I think the woman who actually put the bill up.
Yes, it's her bill. She sponsored it, the wonderful Jody Lautenberg. And remember, the Republicans didn't pitch anything during the regular session.
Right.
They got a lot of praise for that. They waited and called a special session, which is expensive. This is after defunding Planned Parenthood. And this bill that Lautenberg is talking about here would bring the number of women's abortion clinics in Texas from 42 down to 5. And Texas is a huge state. So in an attempt to make it not quite as bad, somebody pitched an amendment that would give an exemption for rape victims, which is what she's talking about.
Right, and this guy, and somebody was bringing up the fact that there's still too few of them, and that he was asking her basically, you think it's okay that if a woman is raped and wants to have an abortion, that she has to drive to San Antonio, if that's the nearest one from where she is, which is a long way, to do this? And, of course, probably have to go through 3 hours of therapy and then go home and then come back the next day, that kind of waiting period business. But this is her response to it. It's a little muddy, but I want the listener to really pay attention to what she's saying. is an option for women who've been sexually assaulted.
Is that acceptable?
Now,
is that the closest
the
place,
is
someone
right,
from El Paso?
We have hospital emergency rooms. We have funded what's called rape kits that will help the woman, basically cleaning her out.
Basically cleaning her out.
Yeah, so she said an emergency room.
Yeah, alleviate that. But if by some chance, God forbid, she finds out.
Would the gentle lady yield? Will the gentle lady yield?
Yes.
Gentle lady yield.
Another woman asked for clarification.
You said it that these ladies would be able to... Excuse me. I was just trying to be able to hear a little bit better. You said these ladies would be able to acquire an abortion at one of the emergency rooms?
In the emergency room, they have what's called rape kits.
Rape kits.
That the woman can get cleaned out, basically like a DNC. And it measures the contraception, where they could also do the morning after pill.
Right. So she's saying that hospitals have rape kits, and that a woman can go in and basically get cleaned out like a DNC, and then they will give her the morning after pill.
You know, women are not cars. You can, this is not like an oil change. I mean, this is like the attitude towards this is unbelievable, and the limitations are unnecessary. Only 1.5% of abortions happen after the 20th week anyway,
right.
And they happen because that's about the time you can do really good testing on anything that might be wrong with the fetus, and it's about the time complications develop for the mother. So overwhelmingly, anything happening after 20 weeks is either to save the mother's life or health, or because they've discovered that something is wrong with the baby, and it would be... You know, it's brutal to ask a woman to carry to term a pregnancy that isn't viable. So this whole thing is ridiculous.
Right.
And it's supposed to get voted on today. Today's the last day of the special session. And the amazing Senator Wendy Davis is planning a filibuster. So women are just showing up to support her today.
Yeah. This is, and by the way, there's, if you don't mind, go ahead and tell people how they can be a part of that too, because there's so many people that can actually go down there if you're in the Texas area and be a part of this kind of last ditch effort to hold this thing at bay.
Absolutely. So I'm going to tweet out the link so you can get it. You can follow me at Katie_speak, and Hal's going to retweet it for me.
Yeah.
The amazing Jessica Luther, she's got a great name that's easy to find. It's on her website, jessicawluther.com. You can help from anywhere. So she's got directions on what to wear. Everyone's wearing orange in support. If you can get to the Capitol, and they're gathering literally right now. And if you can't, she's got a script for your legislators if you live in Texas, and then a way to do, you know, easy things like getting things out to the media, stuff to tweet, so you can do it from your computer at work.
Wow. And by the way, the Supreme Court, this breaking, has just gutted the Voting Rights Act.
Well, we don't have all the details.
Yeah, it says
yet.
It says they've ruled it unconstitutional.
They struck down parts of it,
yeah.
Apparently.
Okay. Well, we'll get to that after the break, too. But that's breaking now. There's no ruling on gay marriage on DOMA or Prop 8. Is that what?
We haven't had DOMA, Prop 8, or...
Right. So we'll discuss that in a little bit, but that just happened, and it's but the DOMA and Prop 8 ones will not come today. They'll probably come Thursday or the latest Friday. This is obviously something, Katie, that I believe is a legislative tool that the Republicans are using, which is set up things in state and local governments that are egregious and frightening as far as women's right to choose and direct their own health decisions. And then people in the House will either support or block anything that would stop it. Mainly they're there to block aid. Personhood amendments and the like, notwithstanding, the House seems to be there just to guarantee that the federal government will have no way of remedying these state House bills.
Right, and Texas isn't alone. It's a bigger deal because it's such a huge state and it affects so many women.
Right.
But Iowa's governor just signed a law, Terry Branstad, that if Medicaid is your health insurance, He literally is the person who will decide if you get an abortion. So if you live in Iowa, ladies, Terry Branstad is your doctor.
Right.
I
yeah.
mean, it's crazy the stuff that's going through. And there's a great book that I plug on your show on occasion. It's called Crow After Roe. It's written by an amazing lady parts lawyer and a great reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about how these state laws are being put through and how they're being strategically used to hopefully one day overturn Roe. So this isn't even just like if you don't live in Texas, if you live in a safe blue state somewhere, this is about you. It's about everyone because they're using these laws to eventually push through. And we just saw just now with the Voting Rights Act, we can't always trust the Supreme Court to come down on the side we would expect them to.
Right. Yeah, this is and I think that's the goal. I think there's a, you know, again, I've always said that conservatives and Republicans ultimately, as much as they might be in disarray right now, there's a segment of them that has a very strong long game and has a constituency that they can really count on. You look at Massachusetts. By the way, if you are in the Massachusetts area right now and you're not voting, just go spit on a service member while you're at it. Because
right?
People have died and are continuing to die for your right to be free and exercise the one main thing that makes a democracy, which is the ability and right to vote. So if you're thinking, no. You have a responsibility to live up to that vote. As much as it might be outside your normal daily schedule, it is incredibly valuable that you act on that right more than anything. So, and the same thing applies. I think a lot of this sort of lazy pullback that happened during 2010 is creating this kind of rush of state legislatures and Tea Partiers in the House that are just egregiously anti-woman.
Absolutely. And when we stayed home in 2010, this is what we got. And a lot of those folks are still in the Senate nationally, and a lot of them are running state houses. Governor Walker is about to sign a law that says, you know, another one of those forced vaginal ultrasound laws. And do you really want Walker to be your doctor? Is that the idea? I mean, it doesn't sound great to me. That's not who
it's
I
so
would
weird
go to.
Yeah, during the whole Obama, and we're up against the break, and I want to thank you for being on the air. Katie_speak is the Twitter handle, and of course, katiespeak.com. Please go there to find out the information on dealing with this Texas law that they're trying to pass through, and a myriad of other issues, because this is a part of a multi-state plan. But I always find it very awkward that the Republicans were arguing against Obamacare based on the idea that the government gets to pick your doctor, that the government is going to be between you and your doctor. This was the biggest hammer they used to try and fight the Affordable Care Act, fight Obamacare. The government is now going to make decisions about your health care. And all of these laws involve the government making decisions that supersede you and your doctor. All of them, the ultrasound laws, this one, the ability to even get to a doctor or have that available to you. And the interesting thing is, it's the death of morality. A moral choice is one that you make regardless of the circumstances. A legal choice is not moral at all. If you think you're going to go to heaven or hell for that, that's not a moral choice. It's avoiding punishment and hoping for reward. That's not morality. Morality is, I don't know what the decision is, but ethically, I think I have the right to make this decision, and this is the right decision for me and society at large, whatever. But this is something I genuinely believe. That's a moral choice.
I'm okay with your living your life however you want to to live your life. But when you decide that you have the right to tell me how to live my life,
apparently
that's where I have a problem.
But that's what the Republicans are doing. That's but by warning us that that's what Obama wanted to do. That's the incredible irony of all these abortion
bills.
Well,
they want to I'm having trouble.
They want to defund
it now. They want to defund Planned Parenthood, which advises women on family planning and gives them an opportunity to
make informed choices.
And that's
a consistent problem. We're way over the break again, because this is how these conversations are going, and that's why it's awesome to have Katie on. Thank you, Katie, so much. I'll also retweet what Katie's putting out too, and that'll be an easy way to find her if you follow me at Hal Sparks. We'll be back right after this. Thank you, Katie.
Thank you, Hal.
Absolutely.
Bye, love.
We'll be back right after this.
It's not radio. It's Stephanie Miller.
the bar?
Ooh, river.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. We're discussing, of course, this push on state houses where they are just crowbarring their religious beliefs into the choices of women all over the country and hoping it's not noticed. Well, apparently it's failing miserably, and especially in Texas, which is a state that's amazingly enough drifting purple. Used to be a red state, clearly, and now is moving much more in the direction of blue, especially as they continue to try these things. The unfortunate part is they're able to, because of control of the state houses, push through these laws.
I just love that Republicans do this autopsy on why they're failing so miserably, and this pollster comes in and says to them, stop talking about rape.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just keep talking about rape.
But here's the thing. I don't care what you talk about. I care about what you believe. And the reason they can't stop
don't talk about it because what you believe is absurd.
That's what I mean, is that the reason they can't stop talking about it is because they really believe it.
But they're, like, obsessed with rape. It's amazing.
But they're obsessed with the idea that rape is fake. That if you really look at it, if you look at the laws and the way they're drifting this, that they don't believe, they probably believe that
you're asking for
of the let's say 100 rapes are reported, 80 of them are fake. That seems to be their general consensus. And the only ones that count are ones where you had a knife or a gun to your head, and you know, a knife to your throat, a gun to your head, or you were beaten up. And you crawl into an emergency room covered in bruises and bleeding and immediately report it to the police. That's how rape occurs. Any other version of that, where you're drugged for multiple days, where you went drinking with friends and suddenly someone dosed you. I mean, there's so many of these areas where they're like, well, this girl was drinking with them and she, you know, why should we be surprised? She was so drunk. Who said she wasn't dosed? Half the time, that's what's big. I don't know. Every woman I know says, at some point I picked up a drink that I had set down on a bar and it tasted funny or whatever. And some guys I know, have told me stories about how they were like, yeah, I had a drink with a couple people and then I started feeling really sick and decided to go home or whatever, and I slept for 14 hours. I must have caught something. I'm like, you didn't catch anything. You were given something.
Or you can just be that drunk.
Right.
You know, sometimes you just, you drink and then you don't realize where you are at that limit, and people make bad decisions when they're drunk.
But that's one thing.
Drunker. And next thing you know, I mean, I know a lot of people who black out when they get drunk and they haven't been drugged and there's no other substance in there. They just drink to the point that they black out and stuff happens.
Right,
and
but even still...
But it's not your responsibility if somebody takes advantage of
but
you.
But that's what I'm saying, is that they wouldn't count that as a real rape. That's what they mean by legitimate rape. That's what they're talking about. If you get so drunk that somebody has sex with you, maybe you said yes, maybe you don't know. And they literally do list that as that. And so there's a drug they're calling the zombie drug in South America right now. It's another form of roofies in many...
This is actually a good public service announcement. You mentioned this earlier and I didn't know what
this
was.
It's called scopolamine. And it's made from some sort of like a switchgrass down there. It's amazingly common, but it's a little hard to refine. But it makes, not only do people wake up 3 days after they've been dosed with it, naked in a park with
is
no
it a
money.
Powder or
it's,
a pill?
Yeah, it can come in multiple forms. The interesting thing is, it makes you, the reason they call it a zombie drug is because it makes you a willing participant. People have robbed and stolen things on it, and they legitimately have no memory of it. People who, find out 3 days, and they're beaten and robbed at the end of it. You know, it's like, it makes you emotionally compliant.
One dose keeps somebody under that control for that long a period of time.
Well, I mean, I think they might continually feed it to you over that time, and if they keep doing it, you might die. But the point is, it's a problem. It's been a problem for a long time. And many people don't, if you're a fan of the RoboCop movies, that's the only mention I've ever heard of scopolamine, which is when they're making this mega brain-altering drug that's cascading over the city. The bad guy goes, the benzedrine's making my teeth wiggle. Cut it with scopolamine, 15 mils per or whatever. That's the reference to it. But that's growing. That's spreading all over. And
is it a thing you throw in the drink the same way you do with Rohypnol?
Yes.
Okay. And it's odorless and tasteless and all that stuff.
The point being is that a lot of Republicans wouldn't consider that a legitimate rape. That's where the legitimate rape conversation comes from. They think you're a willing participant. If you're in a situation where you are even allowing yourself to get drugged, then you kind of had it coming and you're sexually loose anyways, and it's just sex. What's the big deal? I mean, you don't have to be that awake for it. And we're gonna, I'm dead serious. This is what, because you go, what do they mean when they say legitimate rape? This is what they mean, I'm telling you. And we're gonna take your calls when we come back on the other side of this. But this is a real problem because they don't perceive that the majority of rapes are real. Maybe, and that's why, like, they don't care what happens to you.
Maybe it's like homosexuality. If you know someone who's raped, maybe you believe in it.
Right. We'll be back right after this with more of the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in while Steph and the Mooks are on vacation with Jackie Schechner, adding an air of legitimacy to the entire process. And we have a lot of calls, so I want to get to some of them in dealing with the bizarre push for these pro-rape pro-lifers. I don't quite know how to even describe them. Let's go to Dale in Sacramento. Hi, Dale.
Hi. I gave abortions with my husband for decades in Northern California. Mm-hmm. And let me describe the difference between a rape kit and a dilatation and a curettage. All right, a rape kit contains the following things: swabs, slides, and forceps to collect hair and evidence. All right? Mm-hmm. And camera, if you need a camera. There's a camera in every ER. It does not contain dilators, curettes, or any instruments to provide an abortion. If a woman demanded an abortion, she would be denied it. Abortions are denied every day in this country. We don't hear about that. Mm-hmm. We have men who bring their wives in and say, she wants an abortion. She's not even allowed to talk in front of him. And people don't think this happens in our country. We have people who are bought overseas. And they are bossed overseas, women, young girls, they're married to these men, and they're used as slaves. We see this all the time. They have no determination over what goes on in their lives. Hmm. Scopolamine is an anesthetic drug.
Right.
I've given it thousands of times, and it does interfere with higher level function, which is your ability to think out a sequence of events, and you literally can dissociate on it. Like you can, it produces hallucinations in some people. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, the thing they've had in South America is that they've actually had people committing crimes on it.
Mm-hmm. And you can trip on this.
Yeah, and they're saying you can actually, people have said, I helped them rob a bank, and in the moment I was happy to do it. And I'll describe the people that I did it with, but I don't know what the hell was going on. I was, like, that's not something that's me, but I was willing to do that. And they're shocked by their own behavior under it. That's
right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it cuts off frontal lobe cognition, which is what weighs consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why we see younger people who take drugs have more problematic outcomes, because their frontal lobe isn't even developed yet. Okay. So, and this is why we can't get them to go into the military. All right, because if it was 35, the sign-up age,
nobody would join. That's the argument against teaching religion until later in life. I mean, a lot of people argue.
And the fact that somebody wants to put their religious beliefs over anybody's religious beliefs is just abhorrent.
I would even go so far as to say un-American. I mean, the entire purpose of this country is religious plurality, right?
Do they feel they have superior morality to the rest of us, that we cannot make decisions for ourselves, weigh those with the people that we love, our physicians,
and
the people who actually be involved in the decision-making process? Because I'll tell you, the way this is the parable. I'm also a legal nurse consultant. And when they talk about people putting themselves in positions where they can be raped, all right, I draw this parable. Rich guy in an Armani suit has a Rolex watch. He's begging to be robbed. Just look at how he's dressed. Mm-hmm. He's flaunting his wealth. Right. And why would he not be rot? My God, look at him.
Right.
So, and that's exactly what they have always done to women. We're being made to wear a scarlet A.
I will say there's a distinct difference, and this came up in an Iowa and in Idaho, I believe, as well, where they were they wanted to change the legal definition of a rape victim to an accuser. They wanted to change that.
Right.
And the guy in your parable with the Rolex watch would not be forced to be called an accuser in the instance that he was robbed. He would just be the
exactly.
victim. That was a distinct change between those two. No matter how much money that guy was walking around, he should be able to walk with open money. He should be able to walk in this country legally, walk around with fistful of money and not be assaulted and robbed. You
absolutely.
Might go, he had it coming, but you wouldn't not prosecute the people who came up with a gun and said, give me your money. But for somehow, that doesn't apply to a woman's ability to stop when someone from having sex with her against her will. That's a different
right.
legal standard. That's shocking to me.
Right, right. Well, we are lesser people. We are 77 cents on the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Marsha Blackburn says we don't want equal pay for equal work.
Yeah, that was an amazing
the
thing.
Fact that the fact that decisions are made, and this leads to future security because your Social Security is based on what you make. So it does.
And women live longer.
Consequences. Well, and absolutely, and they are the family in a lot of situations. And
but they'll also draw off the Social Security system longer, is my point.
Absolutely.
If you make less, then you earn less, and therefore you'll pull less out at the end. Your husband will die earlier, and he made more, and that's a good way to preserve the system longer. I mean, arguably, it's one of those passive eugenic ways of strengthening the, you know, any kind of you know, protections you have, you know, and money saved for old age. We've talked about this before.
The Republicans thought we had a health care system that it was okay to charge women 15% more because she was a female.
Right.
A carbon.
And the pregnancy
is
a pre-existing condition.
A pre-existing condition, exactly.
Right.
So, I mean, it is just not this. It is everywhere. It is impervious in our society, and it makes me sick. And Jackie Schechner, I love you, baby.
She's amazing. Yes, thank you.
I love you, too.
Thank you so much for calling in, Dale.
You do a great job,
aren't
by the
you
way,
sweet.
You guys.
Yeah.
And yesterday, the morning glitch, we all understood it was technology.
Thank you.
Can't depend on it.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Dale.
Aww.
Dale's terrific. And, we got a couple more minutes, so I want to take a couple more calls on this. Let's go to Elizabeth in Chicago. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Hal. I agree with Dale. I mean, a rape kit is something made by the police for evidence finding. And there is no emergency room anywhere that's going to do a DNC. That doesn't
right.
happen.
Yeah,
that's a made-up thing.
Yeah,
and
the cartoon, what she's trying to do is push the idea that they get the morning after pill if they ask for it, which is, by the way, something that they're also fighting with other laws at the same time. Concurrently, while they're trying to limit your ability to get to an abortion clinic if you want one, they want to eliminate the morning after pill from part of a rape kit, that if you ask for it or the availability of that, you know, was, you know, for 2 years they were pushing this bill that would make it impossible for you to get it if you asked for it when you came in saying you'd been sexually assaulted.
Because they don't understand the difference between the morning after pill
and
the
abortion
pill.
Doesn't make any difference. They don't believe in contraception either.
The thing that, the other point that I want to make, which kind of draws in some other stuff that Stephanie was saying last week, is the idea about the fetus self-stimulating himself.
Right,
you know,
the masturbating fetus concept, yes.
It makes me nauseous because to me that is a way that people can justify pedophilia. They're like, oh, the kid wanted it. Look, he wanted self-stimulation since he was born, blah, blah, blah. It is
right.
nauseating to me.
Yeah, and not only the sexist idea that somehow he was making a case that male fetuses do that and that they're somehow like, well, females, it's not, I mean, it shouldn't be about pleasure anyways.
Her hand to figure language, she was trying to shave.
Yeah, right. awesome. Thank you so much for the call. I appreciate
it.
There's so much to this that is disturbing. And like I said, you and I were talking during the break that, you were saying that if people knew someone who was sexually assaulted, they would probably be more sympathetic to the situation. Statistically speaking, everybody does.
People don't talk about it.
Right, well, that's the thing, and it's almost the exact opposite. I think people, especially, you know, growing up in the South and knowing a lot of people in the South, there's this idea of putting on a veneer that's way more important than the truth a lot of times, especially when it's uncomfortable and might have a social stigma to it. And there's a lot of that deep religious belief that's rooted in how, you know, we look at what happens in Afghanistan and Syria and lots of parts of the Middle East where a woman is assaulted and it's her fault and that she's more to blame than the attackers, even if it was a gang rape. I mean, it's like horrifying. There's a lot of that residual stuff in the religious beliefs of, you know, a big part of the area below what Robin Williams called the Manson-Nixon line. You know, that women kind of had it coming. And if it happens, well, it's just something we don't really talk about. You know, that's embarrassing and it's difficult. And if you do need an abortion, we just send you to see your cousin in the north and take care of it.
It's like when Sparky goes out to pasture.
Right. My dad?
What happened to the dog?
Oh, yeah.
Sparky's on the farm with grandma.
You mean Old Yeller?
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Who didn't shoot him behind the barn.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
But, I mean, this is a very distinct...
Was that too esoteric? Sorry.
Yeah, no. Yeah. No, but there's a very distinct attitude about it, that if it does happen, it's too painful to talk about. And you're just going to – I mean, look at the Steubenville situation where they're like, you're ruining these young men's lives. What?
Yeah.
No, I think we're jailing rapists. I think that's –
Yeah.
I think the act of doing it is what ruined their life, not getting caught. Because if that's your argument, then it's the criminal prosecution system – that is ruining all these, I guess, murderers and drug dealers and rapists and you know, serial physical assaulters out there. You know, it's the courts that's ruining their lives, not the decision.
Well, I would argue that one of the problems that we have is that women lose power in a lot of these arguments because there are certain personal issues that we don't want to talk about because it may be nobody's business. And so I think, for example, the number of women who have had an abortion, mm-hmm. who've decided to have an abortion, is probably much higher than anybody thinks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the number of people in your life who have gone through it is probably much higher than you think.
Sure.
But women don't openly talk about it. And the only time that women openly talk about it, from what I've experienced amongst my social circle, is when they feel they're in a room of sympathetic...
Right.
Parties where they feel comfortable enough saying, I've been through that too,
mm-hmm.
right?
A support group surrounding.
Right, but it's not out in the open.
Right.
And so we don't have the power, and I'm using this as an example, to talk about these sorts of things on an open stage because there's still a sense of it's personal, I'm embarrassed, I don't want to be shamed, or if I'm not embarrassed... It's still a very emotional, personal thing that I've chosen
right.
to do. So we don't end up having the political power behind it, which leaves a vacuum that a lot of these uneducated Republican lawmakers, and I say uneducated because when you tell me that a rape kit is like a Dyson vacuum, you are uneducated.
Yeah.
That, and no offense to Dyson, but I'm just saying, like,
yeah.
It's not even remotely close to the same thing.
Right.
So, but when there's that vacuum of information because we're stuck in a position of not wanting to publicize our personal business, that leaves an area for certain lawmakers to invade.
Well, and the description of what the actual, you know, what an abortion is in and of itself is an uncomfortable thing to talk about.
Of course.
In and of itself. And so the people who are advocating for the right to make that choice, when they go, no, mechanically, physically, this is what occurs, you're always walking into an area where you might actually, set back your conversation by people's ick factor being set off. Whereas if somebody says, you know, well, if a woman is legitimately raped, her body has a way of shutting that thing down, is just, you know, how do you answer that? You know, how do you answer that without going, okay, you're a crazy person.
Right.
And you have no idea how biology works at all. And you have this magic fairy dust idea of what healthcare is. And that's scary on a whole lot of fronts.
And you've been elected to Congress.
Right. And you're on the Health and Human Services Committee because we're going on the dumbest lottery in the world. Okay, Michelle Bachmann, Get straight to intelligence. You over there. The guy with the miner's cap and female body inspector on his shirt. You're on Health and Women's Services Committee. Right. We'll be back right after this. More of the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks with the lovely and talented Jackie Schechner. And your calls, 1-800-STEPH-1-2. We'll be back right after this.
As it turns out, the revolution will not be televised. It's on the radio. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks with Jackie Schechner. We're going to take your calls because we've got a lot of calls.
We're just
your
opinion, man.
Because next hour we are going to get into...
Full-blown Snowden.
Full-blown Snowden. Which is not like Nail and Palin at all. It's a totally different thing or whatever. Let's go to Ann in Connecticut. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Al. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. Go ahead. And try everybody on the, that's on the phone, try to keep it tight because we got very little time. So go ahead.
Okay. I'll be make it quick. I know you're talking about the rape thing, and the things that come out of their mouths are just unbelievable. But getting back to the Republicans in Texas closing these abortion clinics and trying to stop abortion altogether, it always kills me, especially in lower-income areas, of the fact that the Republicans – complain about these women that have children and then go on welfare or need stamps and stuff like that, and they're trying to cut all that back, but then they want to stop them from having these kids when they could probably get an abortion maybe if they wanted to.
Right. Again,
it's much more expensive to raise a child than it is to end an unwanted pregnancy.
Right. Well, this is the confluence of fiscal conservatism butting up against the religious belief of a magical plan from a big old man in the sky. And the problem is that's what they run aground of. I mean, this is really what's going on here, is that these two things are hitting and they create the most odd mix of ideas. On the one hand, I want a soldier standing next to you to make sure you carry this baby to term. And if you have a miscarriage, we're going to have an investigation to make sure it wasn't murder. On the other hand, once it's born, child care, preschool, Head Start, nothing. Food stamps, nothing.
Yeah, I know. It just drives me crazy that the opposite. It's like, you know, why would you not want this young girl who was maybe raped or something to go ahead and have an abortion of a child that, you know, later on, are you going to pay for them to, you know, raise them, help raise them? Where are all those people, you know, those anti-abortion people?
Absolutely.
You know,
no, they have this idea. No, they have this survival of the fittest. Like, remember, it wasn't so bad. We had orphanages, and you know, the tough ones survived, and a bunch of them died. But they were quitters anyways in the game of life. I mean, I'm dead serious. This is where you're coming from. This is passive eugenics at its best. Thanks so much for the call.
Insurance companies do the same thing, by the way. They're not going to cover preventive procedures that actually would be less expensive than having to endure the cost of treating cancer, for example.
Exactly. Let's go to, try this. Oops, I know that's backwards or whatever. Six. Melody in Kansas. Hi, Melody.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Good.
I just wanted to make a point about the draconian laws that all the red states are passing. I think Alec is behind a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And there was a program on Bill Moyers this last Sunday that went through the whole ALEC, their whole layout of what they want, and that's just part of their plan is this abortion and all these other, but it's on his website, and it's really worth watching and listening to because it's been around for 40 years, which I didn't know.
Yeah, well, it's certainly been a strategic, you know, move since Roe. I mean, there's been a long game in place that they will just hammer at it from whatever direction they can to try and break it down. The weird part is that it's created all these kind of secondary attacks to justify their wanting to get rid of this right. And a lot of that secondary attack ends up being, well, you know, not all rapes are real, and, you know, even so much as a statistical majority of them are not real, and therefore laws should not be drafted on that, and that women who are attacked should use the term accuser instead of victim.
It's so repulsive, you can't even I don't know how our country has come to this, but they have been, I mean, there's a whole, this Alec, this is part of the thing. They wine and dine these senators and these legislatures, and they bring these bills up and they end up passing in these state houses.
Yeah.
And this is, it's really disgusting. And it's, I don't think a lot of people know about this. I didn't know about it, and I'm pretty tuned into this stuff, but it's a really big expose, and a lot of people's legislators are controlled or being paid off by Alex. So
absolutely. It's a good
point. I just thought it was an important thing that if people look at Bill Moyer's site just from last week is a very
we'll check it out. And if I can, I'll put the link up on my Twitter. Thanks, Melly. I appreciate it. Let's go to Bruce in Detroit, and we got just a couple minutes left. Hey, Bruce.
How you doing?
Good.
My opinion about this is I feel this is just another way for the Republican Party to get back to that old Ozzie and Harriet Donna Reed thing, that they're going to stop premarital sex, and the only people that are going to have sex are if you're straight and if you're married and you want to raise a home with two kids.
Right. I think you're absolutely right. I think this is social engineering from their point of view, that if you can make it scary enough, the idea of sex scary enough, we're not going to let you have an HPV vaccine. We're not going to you can't get an abortion. If you get pregnant, you're going to have to carry it to term. Even if the baby is stillborn inside you, we're going to make you give birth to a non-viable, unliving fetus. And you're responsible for it if you try to get rid of, like, it's a scare tactic. It's simply that. We'll just frighten people, you know, scared straight program, for lack of a better phrase. We'll be back right after this with more of the Stephanie Miller Show.
You figured, oh, here's a loser, you know, a deadbeat.
Well, aren't you?
Well, yeah.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. And we've got a bunch of calls on the line, some of them dealing with Trayvon and the conversation we had in the first hour. They've been holding on for quite some time, and I want to get to them. And also, we're going to talk this hour about Snowden. That's right. Those calls that you wanted to put in yesterday when the phones weren't working, they are now working.
Let's do it.
Yeah, we're going to talk about some of that. But let's go through these. I'm going to go in order of how long they've been holding, because some of them have been here for a while. So I really appreciate it. Let's go to Judy in New York. Hi, Judy.
Good morning, sweetie. How are you?
I'm doing all right. You know, now that the phones were working today, Tony's not panicking.
I saw that yesterday. That was really trippy. But anyway, good morning, Jackie.
Good morning.
The reason I called was about this, you know, Trayvon Martin Zimmerman nonsense.
Right.
And by the way, as far as repubs go, it just goes to show you can't sex stupid.
Yeah, right. You can actually with education. That's why they try to keep their kids out of college, if you noticed.
Well, you know, that was like when I was filling my ice cube trays with hot water and my granddaughter asked me, why are you doing that, Grandma? I said, it's called molecular velocity. And she goes, huh? You know. But, you know, hot water freezes faster, cold water boils faster, but whatever. I digress. Anyway, with this Zimmerman nonsense, you noticed that video that they showed of him when he was first taken into the police station, that has disappeared.
Yeah.
You know why?
Because there weren't any marks on him?
That's right. Yeah. There was nothing on the back of his head.
Yeah.
Not a thing.
Right.
And I had my glasses on at the time, so, you know, I saw.
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe the prosecution is actually going to play that at some point. I think it's, you know, there may be.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I think Jackie is absolutely right. Mm-hmm. His attorney is making these outlandish, insane comments.
Just in case they need something to fall back on. Right. I think that's a. I hear you, but I have to say that would be the craziest strategy ever. I mean, I wouldn't rule it out.
I don't definitively think that's what's happening, but I think there's no good explanation for why somebody would be that stupid. And there's nobody on the team that turned around and said to him, dude, not a good idea.
Yeah, right. It's so bizarre. Let's go to Joan in Nashville. Hi, Joan.
Yes, I wanted to talk about the Zimmerman trial.
Sure.
It's my understanding that George Zimmerman made a decision that resulted in his being on trial.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. right now. Because all he had to do was to follow the suggestion of the person who answered the 911 call. Well, not 911 call, but answered his call.
Right.
He told the dispatcher where the police could meet him, which was at the end of the entrance, the front entrance to the complex, at the mailbox. And all he had to do was stay in his car. And even if Trayvon Martin had bad intentions, if George Zimmerman had stayed in his car with the doors locked, waiting for the police, he would not be in the situation that he's in now.
You're absolutely right.
So there is no way that he can get away from the responsibility for the decision that he made.
Especially using the stand your ground law. I think that's, and I appreciate you bringing the point up, because I think that's what, you know, Jackie was saying earlier as well.
There wouldn't have been any confrontation had he not gotten out of his car. Trayvon Martin didn't approach him.
He sought it out.
Yeah, Trayvon Martin didn't come after him. He wasn't doing something that was a threat to anybody else in the neighborhood.
Exactly.
There was absolutely no reason for Zimmerman to initiate that encounter.
Exactly. Kathy in Virginia. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Go ahead.
I want you to hear me out on this, please. Okay. And I want America to hear me out on this, is that, you know, when an 18-year-old kid, and this is on Melissa Harris Perry the other day on Sunday, if I'm not mistaken, they took a poll on these kids and asking these black kids what their greatest accomplishment was living until they're 18 years old. Mm-hmm. This goes back to, you know, it absolutely devastates me. This is women's rights. This is everybody's rights besides white American men's rights.
Right.
It is absolutely infuriating. It devastates me to the core. And I'll tell you right now, I will fight it. I will fight it as hard as I can fight it.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it is a problem when your main goal is just survival in a country like ours. I mean, I get it if you were polling.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's absurd is what it is. And the idea that they would, you know, in a country like Somalia, I'd buy that. I would.
It's not even that. Mm-hmm. The thing is that we are supposed to be the number one country. Mm-hmm. And when we treat our own citizens like that, you have all these government workers, you have all these people, you know, in the Republican Party sitting there saying, well, government's so bad, government's this, government's that. And yet they spend millions to get into the government. What is that?
Oh, well, because that's actually a gateway to the job that they want, the control that they want.
Exactly. They want their agenda.
Right.
And when are we going to wake up and sit there and see, I mean, women, blacks, minorities, you know, when are you going to wake up and sit there and see that this is just absolutely absurd? If you just listen to any of these politicians, with the exception, and I mean, I'm not going to give Democrats a blank check on this either. I mean, they've been in, you know, Congress. They've been in, you know, the Senate. They could have done something about this. DOMA, Glass-Steagall, all of this stuff.
Right.
And Obama is the only one that I have seen that I trust. I'm a 54-year-old white woman. Mm-hmm. And he is the only one I've ever voted for.
Interesting. That's great. Well, thanks for the call, Kathy. I appreciate it. Let's get to I want to make sure, because like I said, a bunch of these folks have been holding on. And Pam New Hampshire is going to be with us in a second, because I want to hold her over to the break, because we're going to start talking about the Snowden thing, and she has a comment on that.
Sure.
But let's get to Bob in Louisiana. Hi, Bob.
Morning, Hal. I've been switching back and forth. I've been watching the trial.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the jury out of the room. And they were talking about Zimmerman had made between 100 and 200 calls to this 911
mm-hmm.
about different things that were cars that he didn't know, garage doors being open, and the prosecution is trying to get this put into evidence, and the defense is trying to keep it out. But over a 6-month period, they have a woman on the stand now who initiated the neighborhood watch from 911 in August of 2011. And in a 6-month period, he made that many calls.
Right.
And, I mean,
It's interesting, you know, it's I don't know how they would manage to keep that out, because that's just normal behavior. It's one thing if they go, well, you know, a crime that you may not have been, you know, convicted of. A lot of times they'll do that because it might be harassment from the police. There's all kinds of variants in that. But if it's just standard behavior that he admits to, which he does, you know, I don't think he would deny that he made those phone calls. I mean, right. If I was his defense attorney, I would have him do that. I
wouldn't have said anything, in my mind, he's a grown man living at home. And I can only imagine that he stays in his room and practices what he's going to say, what he's going to do when that time comes that he's got to confront somebody.
I mean, it certainly paints a picture of an extreme paranoia.
Exactly.
Sort, right.
Yeah, it's an excellent point. Thanks so much. Let's go to Dan. Let's see. Randy in Seattle. There you go. Where's Randy? Hey, Randy.
Yes, hi. You know, I'm just hearing these people talking about that they're on Zimmerman's side about this, and it's just so hard to believe that they don't have the feeling of, you know, what it's a 17-year-old kid.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a 19-year-old, and it would just, I just can't understand why anybody would not feel for a kid being killed.
Yeah.
I mean,
and the other thing is, though, in the way that, you know, we weren't really talking about this guy. He sort of reeks as a you know, one of the people. I do equate him more with a Columbine-esque kind of a mentality. He just found a way to justify it. You know, this idea that I'm going to shoot up people who I feel like I've been threatened by, or that I feel are encroaching on my existence in a way that I'm not comfortable with. But instead of going into a school and shooting the place up, or going in my office and shooting people up, I found a way to get around it. And the stand your ground law is the perfect cover for that kind of mentality. I'm going to clean up the streets. It's like he's like a Travis Bickle, you know, De Niro and
De Niro,
Taxi.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. That, you know,
different.
Yeah, De Niro and Taxi Driver, you know, this fixation that he had on what he was going to end up doing, you know. And that plays out with a fantasy, the perfect fantasy, rescuing an underage hooker from these pimps or whatever is the, you know. But the reality is that he's walking around, you know, he's stroking this gun, and the guy he's buying the gun from is using all sorts of racial epithets, and that's the reality of what's going on. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, you said your son's 19?
Yeah, he is, and it's just, you know, the kids, I'm sorry. I'm just so, the people that are defending Zimmerman and coming up with all these, you know, he had the concrete as his weapon. It's just so ridiculous, and it's just so unfeeling about the fact that
I can't imagine.
Let me ask this question. There's a skinny white kid walking home from the store with an iced tea and candy. Does George Zimmerman call the cops and say there's a suspicious kid walking through my neighborhood?
Right.
I mean, that's fundamentally the question. Like, it was the color of his skin,
mm-hmm.
and that,
and his hoodie.
Yeah. And frankly, I mean, that there can't be any other explanation for that, because mm-hmm. he wasn't threatening anybody. He wasn't carrying any sort of dangerous equipment and or weapon.
Right.
He didn't go anywhere he wasn't supposed to go. He was talking on the phone to his girlfriend. I mean, there's really no other extenuating circumstance. Other than the color of his skin.
And what his father must be going through, you know, when your son just went to the store and never came back. Because this guy felt threatened by his very existence enough to where he could walk up to him with a gun and end up killing him. It's just amazing to me.
That's just so sad.
It is.
Know, it's just so ridiculous. And to think that, well, we do have, is it six women? Basically, as the
it's the whole jury.
Yeah, this and is strange. It's only six.
Yeah,
is that normal?
Well, I know that five of them have children or have had children, and you know, I just really hope that they can get that kind of, you know, understanding about the situation, that, you know, it's a child, and you just don't go around shooting children.
Yeah, like unarmed children. It's just that part is amazing to me. I appreciate the call, and it's a point of view that I think needs to be raised in all this. Is this kind of this vigilante mentality, this movie-esque idea of what it's like to carry a gun because America's a dangerous place and I'm the last line because the cops aren't around, blah, blah, blah. This video game fantasy allows you to paint this picture of...
Yeah, but let's not blame video games.
No.
Because I have a real problem with that.
Oh, I do too.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is that I'm not coming from Zimmerman. I'm not saying he was a video game player and that's
okay.
I mean, the people who are armchairing this.
Oh. Who look at this like a video game scenario.
Exactly, and are watching it almost like a movie play out. We got to take a break. We'll be back right after this. More of your calls. And, of course, we're going to talk about Snowden. When we come back, we really do need to discuss the rights and wrongs of this.
And now, here's something we hope you'll really like.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, it's a good time. I mean, I've seen these guys live since and stuff. It's great. I mean, you know, it's a shame that the rest of their material didn't take off. That's my nice way of saying that they're known as a one-hit wonder, but this song's good pretty stuff, kicking. Though. It's a good, I mean, it's one of those things where it's that, that's my jam moment when they play it in a club for a lot of hair metal fans. So let's talk Snowden, because we've got some calls on the, you know, on the line that want to discuss this. And let's bring everybody up to date. Right now, Snowden is apparently, according to Putin,
in the airport,
who's a completely trustworthy source, has looked at his magic decoder Super Bowl ring and discovered that he's I guess in the transit lounge having a snack at the Moscow airport, which is really not where you want to hang out for multiple days eating.
I'm going to imagine the food's not that great.
Yeah, it's not good.
And they say they're not going to extradite him. That's the
right. Well, he's
news.
Technically not. He's in sort of the customs limbo when you do that.
Well, you mentioned, what was the Tom Hanks movie where he got stranded in an airport?
Which did very well. But the idea is that you're in this, because of how these things are laid out, if you haven't actually passed through customs and you're in that area, you're not technically that country's problem yet. And so you can kind of mess around until it's almost indefinitely. It's not quite where.
How many of those little packs of peanuts can you eat?
Oh, yeah.
You're digging out the salt.
That would be if you were on the actual plane. I think this.
You don't think they throw some his way in the
Russian
airport?
Russian snack stands they have. This is the only thing we have left over is just kind of pig ear, and this is just what's left. I can't do the Starbucks is closed. Dude. It's like 12:04. There's no way that, like, who has coffee at this hour? I mean, I know you're a net guy. These IT guys drinking coffee till 2 o'clock in the morning, man. Just get off of Pirate Bay and leave it alone for a little while. You know what I mean? Pull back. This is ridiculous.
You can't get on the Usenet.
So he's on his way. Theoretically, he's got, according to Julian Assange, he's got papers to get him to Ecuador, on a political refugee status, so he can hang out with Julian Assange in I guess in another sort of version of political limbo, living in the
Ecuadorian embassy.
Yeah.
Is that, or are they going to go to Ecuador?
I think it's actual Ecuador.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's a curious thing because, like I said, there was a quote that came out that said, you know, there's a difference between a leaker and a whistleblower. One reports a crime, another one commits one. And I think the problem and what makes the Snowden situation murky is that he has technically done both. On the one hand, it's technically not criminal. There's a lot of legal jumping around and unconstitutional as
well,
it may.
Well, if you sign a contract, some sort of confidentiality agreement, or you've got
an oath.
Right, or you take an oath to have a certain level of security clearance,
right,
to work on behalf of your government to protect it from enemies.
Foreign and domestic.
I would imagine that you've broken some sort of
legal obligation. The day before yesterday, he said that he took the job specifically to get that information, which is fraud as well.
Right.
Now, here's the thing. There are many people who think that the information that he gave out about the fact that the NSA and the prison program is reason enough for all the other things that he did. I disagree.
Me too.
And I think that the fact that he left with laptops that gave him the encryption ability to get back into the NSA computers for days and weeks afterwards and means that all that stuff is now available to all those countries that he is flying through.
And goes to Hong Kong and Russia.
Right.
And, like,
through Cuba to Ecuador is the plan.
You sound like a patriot when you do that?
Yeah,
you sound like you're protecting the U.S. when you do that?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I get that you're not going to go to a direct ally because you're fighting extradition, so a lot of our direct allies might, you know, that. But there's got to be a watery zone in there. That being said, it's these countries with, like, egregious, and he went to China basically going, you know, the U.S. is spying on you. It's like, first of all, duh. Secondly, they're spying on us. They've been doing cyber attacks straight out of Beijing to, like, denial of service attacks, not even hacking where you're getting information, which is arguably what he was saying the NSA was doing with these other countries. They've been shutting down systems in the United
States.
What
do you think the NSA does?
Right.
I mean, you work for the NSA, and then you fraudulently take a job at Booz Allen Hamilton, and what do you think they're doing?
Like, right.
Josh Marshall wrote this great piece, and I think that I'm very much on par with where he is that there's a very clear distinction between having the conversation about what the NSA does, the Patriot Act, what level of surveillance we should be enduring, and what we should condone. And I'm happy to have that conversation all day long, and I'm happy we're having it. Mm-hmm. But there's another conversation to have about who this kid is and what he did and the level of
access that he had.
The level of audacity to think that you, as a 29-year-old kid, and I bring up the age because I think there's a lack of life experience at some point,
right,
to think that you have the right to make a decision as to what is and isn't in the nation's best interest and national security.
Right. Well,
and
again,
I think it's very fair to have that conversation.
We'll also talk about what's the difference between espionage when you're selling the information versus when you just want to take down the government system that you think is wrong. We'll be back right after this with your calls. 1-800-STEP-12 is the number.
The working man, don't trust Whitey. See a doctor and get rid of it.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in all week as Steph and the Mooks are away on vacation. And we're, of course, talking Snowden, and we've got plenty of calls. A lot of people who wanted to call in yesterday to discuss this, getting back into the mix. And, of course, Pam in New Hampshire has been holding on for quite some time because we kind of teased this early and got back to it. Hi, Pam. Are you there?
Hi, Hal. How are you?
Good. Thanks.
Well, I am an ex-Republican. I grew up in Alaska, and I went to high school with Sarah Palin.
Wow.
And voted for her as mayor. She was not a psycho back then.
Okay.
But everything we have been discussing going to Snowden, I think he is a traitor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think these reporters and members of Congress on both in the left and the right,
yeah,
you know, coming out, I didn't know the bill was going to do this. I didn't. Then you need to fight it, or you don't sign a bill you don't read, or you don't sign a bill that you don't question. And as far as John McCain coming out this morning and saying, oh, well, Obama needs to be tougher on Russia and China. What have our global leaders heard in 5 years? Obama's a Muslim. He's weak. He's a terrorist. He's Hitler. He's this. So they don't have any respect for him when they see parts of our government disrespect him for
right.
Dennis Rodman to go to China, for
North Korea,
De Gaulle to go to Russia. I'm just saying, what is Obama supposed to do when these world leaders have seen Republicans treat this man like crap? Even when he goes overseas, they dog him, which was always, it stops at the water's edge.
Well, at a certain point, he's not going to, when he's got no recourse within the House of Representatives, at what point does a world leader get to take what he says seriously when they're discussing trade?
That's what I'm trying to say.
Border laws, immigration, anything.
And what's going to happen is everything you guys have been talking about this morning is all you little whiny liberals, and I am one of them, are going to sit home next year.
And
then your rights as a women are going to be gone. Your rights as voting has already been struck down this morning. So you know what? You want to sit home and pout? Obama never said he wasn't going to do this. He said he was going to, but he was going to go through the courts.
Mm-hmm.
He never said he was not going to do this. So I just want to bring that up. So you guys want to sit home next year. Women will have no more rights. It'll be harder to vote. Everything, climate change, everything you guys want will be gone.
Right.
So I think everyone has a choice to make, but I don't think he's a hero. We don't know what he has. We could get hurt, or someone could hurt him.
Yeah, well,
they want that information.
Right, that was my case, is that now, if he dies, If he's killed in Russia or if he's killed in Ecuador or whatever, there's a section of the population from, Greenwald supporters to, the far right Alex Jones of the world who will think he was just snuffed to cover stuff that's even bigger than whatever, and will just continue this kind of march of distrust in the general government and people's distaste with government to the point where people won't vote the next time around. That's an easy enough strategy for almost any low-end political actor in the world militarily to go, send somebody in to kill this guy. Because and now we've got a vested interest in keeping this guy alive.
Because we don't know what he has and how bad would Putin want
to
know.
They want it, right, exactly.
They want it. So that is treason.
Right.
What he is doing now is treason. Congress voted for this, and you got Sensenbrenner, who wrote the Patriot Act. Oh, I didn't realize it would do this.
Yeah, that's
and
absurd.
You don't know what you're signing. So let's respect Obama a little bit and sit home next year.
Beyond signing, writing it. Sensenbrenner was one of the drafters of it, and he doesn't understand that this is the ramification of it, then he shouldn't be in office. Thank you so much. Let's go to John in Detroit, because I think he's probably got the alternate view of this. Hey, John.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I guess a lot of the problem with this Snowden NSA thing is it's a lot of hypotheticals. We're a lot of ignorant on a lot of issues. I guess I have two quick problems. I'll try to be as concise as possible.
Okay.
I think the fundamental issue is if someone signs a contract or an oath, people saying he signed an oath, even if someone sees something that conflicts with their conscience, can they just say nothing? So I think that's one logical issue. And the second issue is, I'm sure you can talk about it, I hear a lot of, I think it's kind of like a sense of elitism and ad hominem attacks where we hear, oh, he didn't have a diploma. Oh, he's 29. Who is he to make this decision? But all those things are irrelevant. It's like the Bradley Manning thing. This guy was a low-rating official, but he saw a complete atrocity, a murder in Iraq. And obviously, I'm not naive. I understand sometimes we have to do bad things in this world in order to achieve good things in the end. The world's not a perfect place. But like I said, just because someone signs an oath doesn't mean it's just a complete power grab by the state, and you can't do anything about that.
Oh, I agree. I will say that insofar as...
Not compare Edward Snowden to Bradley Manning anymore?
Yeah.
I really would...
They aren't immediately conflatable.
That.
I will agree with you on that. I don't think they're immediately conflatable.
No. It's not the same circumstance, and you're not the first person to do it, and you won't be the last, and I don't mean to say it in a nasty way, but I'm so tired of people making that immediate comparison. It's two totally different situations, and I don't think that we know enough about Snowden and this situation yet to put it in the same camp with Bradley Manning.
And I will also say that directly, Bradley Manning released a video of a murder, basically, of a video showing soldiers gunning down what it turned out to be Reuters photographers at a scene, which is a direct crime, and made that come out. Snowden had a problem with a program that was
legal.
Tacitly legal and deserving of debate and I believe deserving of repeal of that law and release that same information. I don't think that's necessarily the same thing, especially because Bradley Manning felt like he could not – there was nothing being done up the chain because everybody he worked with had seen this murder –
And acted
to actually suppress it, whereas the NSA program was just part of the normal workings of the NSA and was something they were doing in their belief in a lot of ways to protect the country. And Snowden disagreed with that and felt the need to release that information. And then, by the way, went into this with the full expectation that he was going to do this. Which is fraudulent, and I think there is a difference. I'm not, and by the way, I don't have a problem with his age or his having a GED or him being just kind of an IT guy.
The previous co-host said that, and I understand where she's coming from. Like, I understand this is a young kid. It's irrelevant to whether or not this is some type of moral immoral act, whether he's 21, 29, or 49. I think I agree with you guys that the issues are different in the content. I think the philosophy is still the same. Can someone who signs an oath, whether it be Bradley Manning in the Marine Corps or Army, I can't remember, or someone working at the CIA or NSA, is it just, because I only see it as too
logical. Do you have another recourse besides going to the press about it? Do you have a chain of command that you can go up and say, look, technically this program is, as an IT person, this is illegal, or this is moving outside of the realm of what we should be doing. And the question is, is that in place? Technically, it is. Did he take advantage of it? The other thing is he said he didn't go to the New York Times, for example, because they had sat on an NSA spying story for a year during an election year in 2004. That was his reasoning for not.
It's kind of a secondary issue. I think the mainstream media, New York Times, CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, are more or less wrestling entertainment propaganda outfits. That's my personal opinion. So I could see why he wouldn't want to go to the New York Times. They've suppressed things like East Timor and Israeli covert action. So I just don't think. I mean, that's, to me,
well, it's interesting that he went. He didn't. Well, speaking of East Timor, he didn't go to Amy Goodman.
He went to Amy. Or go ahead. I'm sorry.
He didn't go to Amy Goodman. He went to Glenn Greenwald, who lives in Brazil, works for The Guardian, is a libertarian and very much anti-U.S. government. I mean, he's very anti-Obama. He has been for a long time. And he works with
Laura Poitras.
Laura Poitras, who and I don't have a problem with people who, when they see egregious overreaches of government, really focus on this. But the permanent adversarial relationship, I think, taints the conversation. Yeah, sure.
I think all this has to come in the context of, one, the Patriot Act, and two, we just got over, and I think it's three, American citizens were assassinated by this government. Now, I don't want to get into party politics. I am left, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I understand we don't understand all the information, but Anwar Awlaki, for all intents and purposes, was, from what we know factually, a YouTube religious nut.
What was released after the fact was that he was involved in planning, not just associative messaging.
The government never charged him with that, though. They just killed him outright.
Well, he was charged in one of the governmental courts. That's what the whole thing about the FISA argument is that there's a secret court that's going on. One of the reasons why that court is secret is because if you start talking about it in an open court, the people who are associated with it will scatter and are no longer targets or know that you're going after them. The same reason that sometimes a police officer drives 65 miles an hour through a neighborhood with his lights off, because if he approaches with his lights on, the person who's involved in the crime will either shoot someone or leave. Law enforcement does that all the time. And it's not, technically speaking, if you're coming from it from the point of view of transparency, there should be no circumstance where the police do not announce that they're coming from 10 blocks away. And that's absurd, and we all know that if your goal is to stop crime. And so there has to be some element of that. This idea that we're going to have full transparency about things that
I never said full transparency.
No, but what I'm saying is that the story about him didn't come out before they went after him. It came out afterwards because up until they were trying to get him, they couldn't release that information.
This is a new political philosophy that I'm aware of, where if in some terrorism aspect, if someone is not, you're not able to catch somebody based on what the state says, not based on what we know, we can just kill them then.
Well,
it's
not new at all. Actually, and insofar as the military code of conduct, we've been able to shoot our own soldiers simply for running away without a trial.
That is in a battlefield context where it's like if I go rob a bank, right?
Yes.
And I'm shooting at people, obviously I can be shot at. But if someone is simply
planning about a bank robbery,
Well, how do we know that? This is my problem. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. The state says, well, he was planning to do terrorist activity, and that's what we said, so therefore we can kill him. It's a circular argument. It's completely – the whole burden of proof premise is gone. I mean, that's the whole basis of why we have a justice system.
I wouldn't say it's gone, and I think we have – there's we many – but there are many,
it's gone.
Yeah, but there are many situations where – where insofar as racketeering, RICO laws, where a continuing criminal enterprise is going on, be it a murder incorporated or be it a drug ring or those kind of things, and the police know this is continuing. They have information from multiple sources that drugs are coming in and out of a building, that this guy is coordinating them, that he's in the building at the time. Let me complete the thought, and then I want to hear what you have to say about it. Then they go, okay, we're sending SWAT in, for example, to arrest and clear the area. And in the process of this, they know that there's going to be a return fire. Everybody there is seen as a combatant, whether they have a gun on them or not, in that circumstance. Law enforcement does that worldwide, has forever, as a law enforcement act, as a non-military act. The drone strike aspect of things falls more under that purview legally than it does under an act of war. That's how I'm not saying the right or wrongs of it. I'm saying that's how it's enacted. The problem is we look at it as act of war. We look at it as battlefield tactic. And the reality is that's not how it's playing out at all. And that's not how it should, arguably. And if you're looking at why we're going to send drones in to kill people, it's because there's never been a flag-draped coffin with a drone in it.
I understand context. We're saying in this new age of terror, okay, I think you would agree that threat could be exaggerated for nefarious reasons. In this new age of terror, I mean, for instance, I have, anti-political views with this government, and I may make a YouTube video or go to Brazil or whatever, and...
Yeah.
You're making
the assumption that that's the only thing. And I understand the concern in that regard, but it's not based on the way it's playing out, that the people that are being, that are being specifically targeted in these circumstances. And in the situation with Snowden, he's just kind of making this YouTube-like decision about that the government acts like this and it kills people wantonly and it will continue to kill people wantonly and therefore, just by sifting through everybody's phones and lines and concocting these ideas about almost any of its political enemies. That's a big stretch for a lot of people. And the idea that you would just kind of go, that gives me the right to not only, and we got to take a break, and I appreciate you at least having the conversation with me, in the case of, it's one thing to say, I've got to let people know about the PRISM system, that actual NSA program. That's important to me, and I don't think the American people knows, and I'm going to be a man on the run for the rest of my life because I'm letting people know. The problem is that he took four laptops with him that have access to the NSA stuff and other information, and he went straight to China and then Russia and these other places. It undermines the purity of this situation, and that's, I think, why it doesn't mix with the Bradley Manning
thing. I'll add another threat into that undermines
after the
purity.
When we get back. I appreciate the call. I really do. We'll be back right after this. More of the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in this week.
Woo!
Tomorrow is going to be the big DOMA Supreme Court thing. It's going to be a big day, too.
Thank God you are gay adjacent.
Yes, exactly. We've got a few more minutes, though. We're going to take more of your calls. We'll be back.
Ladies and gentlemen, prepare yourselves for a shock.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
I'm quite sure they will say so.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks filling in on a big news week. It looks like tomorrow we're going to get the DOMA and Prop 8 decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Today they decided to rule that Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act is unconstitutional because the gauge, the system they use to determine whether a state is complying with the ability for every one of its citizens to vote was outdated, essentially, and that Congress needs to come up with a new system.
Seeing as how efficient Congress is.
Yeah, that'll happen.
That'll happen.
Yeah, considering, I bet we could do it. You know how? Sneak it into the repeal of Obamacare bill.
Ooh, the 38th one.
Yeah, it'll never get into the Senate, and it will never get signed by the president, but it'll be at least voted on in the House.
38th, the charm.
Let's go to Sophia in Kentucky. Hi, Sophia.
Hey, Hal, how are you?
I'm good. You're calling from my home state.
Yes, I am. I'm the one who told you needed to have the qualifier before your comedy routines about telling your audience to wear depends.
That's true. It is a natural effect.
Very funny man. Seriously, though, I'm a little concerned about a lot of this stuff. I really wish we'd stop focusing on Snowden altogether. If he is a narcissist, that would do the trick. If he's not a narcissist and we're focusing on the information, that's what he wants, allegedly.
Right.
And I think he sees himself more as a global citizen at this point. And
as
I think
opposed to an American citizen, right.
The point he's trying to make is that multinational corporations have drowned our government in Grover Norquist's bathtub and basically are using our government as a front for their corruption. And I don't think it's our government that is evil. I think it's the corporations that have been contracted by our government to do these things that are the danger, and I think that is what he is trying to point out. So I just wanted to weigh in on that.
Okay. I hear you. It's interesting because I want to thanks for the call, Sophia. You and I were talking during the break about how he was saying it's not about him,
right?
And then immediately proceeded to make it about him.
Yeah,
and the moment he seemed to step back from them at all, Glenn Greenwald would step in and make it about him instead.
Yeah, I mean, you can't turn around and say that you have this fundamental belief and that you want this belief to be out there and let people just debate the merits of this program and step back from it if you say it's not about me, and then you do a 16-minute video, and then you do an exclusive with the South China News, and then you do a Q&A on the Guardian website, and then you go to Hong Kong and Russia, and it's all about you every step of the way. And I don't think that you can take the information in a vacuum when you're constantly making the story about you as the source and what you have. And I compare this to Scott Prouty, the guy who released the 47% Mitt Romney video. Is that video came out and he disappeared, and we had no idea who he was, and we didn't find out till long after the election.
Right.
The reason why is because he thought that the content of the video was so important that he didn't need to be attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is a man who says the content's important, discuss the content.
Right.
Right? And then he came out later and discussed it, and that's great. We have that story. But for me, you can't take it in a vacuum. You have to take a look at where this is coming from a kid who lied about his education, from what we know, right? Mm-hmm. From a guy like Glenn Greenwald, who lives in Brazil and has some very strong views about the United States and the United States government. From Poitras and Greenwald and Ellsberg, who are working on a foundation together. And then Ellsberg, the day after, writes an op-ed. I mean, you can't take it in a vacuum. It doesn't discount the conversation we need to have about the Patriot Act and the NSA and government surveillance. But you cannot separate them out when Snowden and Greenwald are injecting themselves into this every step of the way.
Well, and the irony is that if you look at public opinion and how it's turning out, that this is becoming very much a focus on Snowden, and that when you really start asking the American people about the prison program, a vast majority of them, especially younger people, are shrugging it off and going, well, what do you expect? And if your whole purpose was to, you know, to bring it down and make people realize that their freedom is in danger, it's a terrible way of doing it. It's just and it becomes this narcissistic machinery that doesn't serve the ultimate purpose that you say it's supposed to serve. Tomorrow, I'm sure we'll be talking about this because he's apparently in a transit lounge waiting to get, you know, a window seat.
Do they have a vodka bar?
Huh?
They have a vodka bar?
Oh, I'm certain they have a vodka bar. Thank you, Jackie Schechner.
Oh,
thanks.
My pleasure.
T-Bone on the phones, dealing with everybody. Thank you, Tony Sorrentino. And I will see you tomorrow. You know, kick in on this discussion on Twitter, at Hal Sparks, all day long. Just tell me what you think. And we'll discuss this more tomorrow, as well as DOMA and Prop 8. Those rulings are coming out tomorrow.
Finally.
Big deal. Big deal. We'll see you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show.